welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 17 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltaka, as usual. And it looks like we have a fight on our hands with Bill C-71. I've got a colossal update for you all in this episode. I actually pre-recorded an episode that was supposed to go up last week, which was scheduled, but so much happened so quickly that it was irrelevant by the time it was supposed to be released. So I had to redo most of it, and that's what you're listening to today. So anyway, I will reveal phase one of our action plan. I will bring Wilson on to give you a rundown of what we did in Ottawa and Toronto, which should be a lot of fun. And we'll finish off this episode with an interview with four-time DCRA and 18-time BCRA service conditions champion Ryan Stacey. I've been promising to bring Ryan Stacey on for a while, and now I'm following through. So all of that and more right after this.
Hunters and sports shooters have a lot more in common than they think. Politicians and bureaucrats will never stop pushing toward their vision of Canada where only the police and the military have firearms. All gun owners need to stand together. An attack on one is an attack on us all. Let these people know they do not have your consent. Stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms. Donate now or become a member of the CCFR at www.firearmrights.ca.
Welcome back, everybody. Okay, what a week and a half. You know, I met a lot of people at the pub nights and in the booths, both at TACCOM and the Toronto Sportsman Show, and I think I told about 30 people to just be patient with me because my brain was like a baked potato. So anyway, a lot has happened. So we had some bad news this week about Bill C-71, and I don't know if anybody noticed if I'm the only one, but it's backwards. It's the opposite of the disastrous Bill C-17 back in the day. So I don't know. Maybe they're cooking up some witchcraft there on the hill or something. But the good news is that the CCFR was there on the hill for 4 days to show the government at least that we're still here and that we don't accept responsibility for the actions of criminals. So anyway, I'll get into that in a moment. So it all started in Toronto for the Toronto Sportsman Show. I met a lot of our great supporters, and thanks to everyone for stopping by the booth and for all the kind words. That means a lot. I got to say that I'm personally extremely grateful for all of your help. It's been a good fundraising month for the CCFR. You know, we need the help. If I met you at any of the events over the past week or so, you know, I probably told you that we can't do it by ourselves. You know, we're doing some great work, but we can't do it by ourselves. So I'm really, really thankful for everyone. It's actually difficult for me to express my gratitude, I guess, in the most effective way that I could. But I'm just very grateful for our members and our volunteers and everything that they've done for the CCFR. So I just wanted to mention that. Anyway, couldn't do it without all of you. Then from Toronto, I went to the Toronto Sportsman Show and probably met a few of you guys there. And thanks for stopping by. And it was a great event for signing up new members. We signed up tons of new members. It was pretty busy. But from there, Wilson and I drove to Ottawa to begin our lobby week. So the summary of the trip is that we met with a lot of MPs. We did a conservative roundtable to discuss some strategies, discuss the new bill, because we actually received that bill in real time. We did a ton of media and a parliamentary press conference, which went, I think, really, really well. So I was really excited about that afterwards. Not so much before, but afterwards. But I'm going to speed read this list of what we did when we went out there. This was sent out as an email newsletter, so you all may have heard this already. So I will make that real quick. Let me grab that list. And like I said, I'm going to speed read this. So it's not going to be the most eloquent radio stuff. Okay, here we go. On the Monday that we were in the Hill, we had a business meeting at SFRC, met with our good friend, Ryan Harriman, who was a great host. Thank you for that, Ryan. We did an in-studio with Brian Lilly on AM 580 CFRA in Ottawa. We met with Blaine Calkins, who's always been a great supporter for firearm owners. So we appreciate that. We also did an interview with Courtney Theriault, City News Edmonton. On Tuesday, we met with Steve Blaney. So, he used to be the Minister of Public Safety. So we had some great insight and really enjoyed meeting him. We also met with the Shadow Minister for Public Safety on the Conservative side, Pierre Paulhus. We had a firearm roundtable. We had, I think, seven MPs and some staffers there. So it was really great for all them to make the time for us. I did two interviews on CTV National News at the Ottawa Bureau. We had a public safety technical briefing on Bill C-71 first thing in the morning, which was interesting. Tracy did an interview on the Rick Gibbons Show, which is AM 1310 in Ottawa. I did an interview with Andrew Lawton, which is AM 980 in London, Ontario. I did an interview with John Gormley on AM 980 at CJME in Regina. An interview on the Charles Adler Show, that's an AM 980 in Vancouver. Boy, they're sharing the same frequency there. And that one was late. That was like 11 o'clock, quarter after 11 at night. And an interview with BBC International. So all that was Tuesday. Tuesday was completely insane. Wednesday wasn't much better. We actually met with the Liberal chairman of the Hunting and Fishing or Outdoor Caucus, TJ Harvey, who was very gracious. And we really appreciate his conversation. We attended question period. We did two informal meetings. No details on that. That's kind of a secret stuff, secret squirrel stuff. I did an interview on the Mike Farwell Show. I always enjoy talking to Mike. He's very reasonable. And that's AM 570 Kitchener, Ontario. And I also did an interview on the Ryan Jesperson Show, which is AM 630 CHED in Edmonton. That was Wednesday. And then on Thursday, we did a parliamentary press conference, which went beautifully. And that's up. Actually, it's on the CPAC channel or CPAC website, if you want to go check that out. We met with Brad Trost. That was always an interesting meeting. If you're familiar with what's going on there, that's I can imagine. We did an undisclosed meeting as well. And then we did a pub night. So that was our week on the Hill. And it was, I was exhausted. I think a couple of people said I looked exhausted even in the pictures, but which is very nice, I guess. All right, back to my agenda. So, all right, moving on. The reality of Bill C-71, and it's important that we stick to reality, is that the Liberals have a majority right now. They can pass whatever they want. But first thing is we're not going to make it easy on them. And we're going to continue to embarrass them throughout this whole process and throughout the next election cycle. And the reason for that is this bill, I'd like to say we did some consultation, but we really didn't do much of that. They didn't really want to reveal what they wanted to do. I mean, we had an idea and we did have some information. You guys probably already know that because some of it was on our, we released some of it on the firearmrights.ca website. But the bill was did absolutely nothing to change the behavior of criminals, and every single measure of it is aimed at licensed gun owners. So anyway, I'm not going to say we're at war with them, but we're just going to continue to embarrass them and continue to expose this poor governance that they're engaged in all the way through the next election cycle, if need be. We're going to create as much discord in the party as possible as well. And there's a role for all of us to play in this. So here's phase one of our action plan. Number one, the CCFR will produce 1 to 5 short political videos highlighting the ridiculousness of the measures in Bill C-71. Your job is to share them on every social media platform that you're engaged in, and also attempt, when you have a few minutes, to calmly provoke discussion on the topic or to provide links and evidence. This will make a huge difference. So, just a quick comment on this. You know, when you're debating online, and I think I've said this before, I might even have said this in the last podcast, so just bear with me if I'm repeating myself, but it's really important. When you're talking to somebody online and you're engaging them, and let's call it an argument, let's say you're arguing or debating with somebody online, you will probably never win that person over, because that's the one person that has their heels dug in so deeply that they will argue with you online. Okay, so it's you'll probably never win that argument. They're never going to go, oh yeah, your facts and reason, you're right, I changed my opinion. That's not going to happen. But the whole point is, it's, you know, there's probably 100 or 200 or maybe thousands of people that are watching that conversation occur. And these are the people that don't comment. And what you want is you want all these people to look at the gun person. They're like, the gun person is the gun guy. That's the person that's the calm, reasonable voice in this discussion. And the anti-gun person is irrational and they're name calling and whatever. You're not doing it for the person you're arguing with. You're doing it for everybody else that's reading that conversation and that will continue to read that conversation for the next week. You know, when they you know, come across that posting or whatever. And this is a faith-based initiative. You have to have faith that people are watching, and you have to have faith that they're making up their minds on, you know, what side of this issue they want to stand. And that does happen. Okay, you're making a difference. It could be the difference with hundreds of people. So you just got to have faith because that is happening. Okay. So anyway, those nice civil debates online do make a difference. So please do that whenever you know. If you're sitting in bed after work and, you know, on your computer, just see what you can do there. So it helps. Number two, the CCFR will post a link to the contact information to all Liberal MPs, Conservative and NDP. So your job is to place a phone call. This is important. Once every 7 days, not more than that, because once every 7 days is a pretty reasonable frequency. Okay. And just, you want to leave a message and you're going to call the constituency office, not the Parliament Hill office. This is very important. If you are in a Liberal or NDP riding, your message is basically this. You know, I'd like to get a call back from, you know, so-and-so MP. I'm very concerned about C-71. This is a really bad bill. It's aimed at licensed gun owners, and licensed gun owners are already overregulated. I mean, they get a criminal record check or run through CPIC every single day. Like these, you know, I think if you're going to aim anything at licensed gun owners, I think first you need to prove that licensed gun owners represent a disproportionate threat to public safety. And I don't think you can prove that. So I'm really concerned about this bill, and I want to know where you stand and what you're going to do. You know, are you going to support it, even though it's ineffective, or what? Anyway, please give me a call back. That's the type of message. Obviously, you don't want to threaten or yell or rant and rave. You just be a really concerned citizen. If you're in a conservative riding, do the same thing. And your message is, hey, you know, this is Rod. I am very concerned about Bill C-71. I really hope that you guys are going to oppose this plan, this bill, I should say. Really important that you do that, because I'm a law-abiding gun owner, and I know that gun owners are not represented in a lot of shootings, if any, per year. And this is really, really poor and irresponsible governance. And, you know, I'd like you to stand up against it. That's all you need to say, right? But it's just this gentle reminder. Hey, listen, we're watching and there's an election coming up. So number three, educate yourself on the arguments against the bill so that you can articulate yourself in conversations in both your personal life and with your MPs. So if I can make the time, I may make some videos to help you with that, but no promises on this one, because I have so much to do in such a small, short amount of time, but I'm going to try. So another resource is a pair of awesome documents. Basically, they're copies of the act as they would be amended. And now they were created by the CCFR's in-house legal counsel. And they can be found on firearmrights.ca. And pretty much a rundown of everything I just said can be found on firearmrights.ca. And what's that story called again? Hold on, I'm going to look it up. Just, it's the most recent if you go to the website. But basically the whole plan, like I told you just now, is sitting there. Oh, I screwed that up. Sitting there on the website. And it's called C-71 Simplified Bill Analysis and Contentions. So check that out. That'll be a good way for you to review this plan and stuff like that. So I'm going to wrap up this segment. It was a bit long, but the level of effectiveness of our actions, as I just detailed them, is contingent on how long we can all sustain that one call per 7 day period. And also how much discipline we can have to try to engage in conversation, how much discipline that we can have with our own emotions, kind of thing, right? So be calm, but be concerned. The CCFR is providing tools and coordination, and we will see if we can get some feedback from politicians on our progress. But obviously we can't do it by ourselves, right? We need your help to do this. So there's absolutely no possible way that we can do this work, this strategy, without you. And actually, as we say in our advertisements, and this is real, stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, right? We've made that our sort of our tagline in our ads, and it's absolutely true, okay? So thanks for hanging in there. It was a long segment, but very important. Make those phone calls once a week. Engage in conversation personally with people and online. If there's thousands of us doing this, that makes an enormous difference. Okay, so we need to reject this bill. It's probably going to go through. Well, I don't say probably. It's going to go through. The liberals are going to push it very quickly. But what we got to do is we're setting our sights past this because there's nothing we can do. They have a majority. So past this election cycle, and hopefully we've set the tone when the conservatives create a platform for their new election, and we're not going to see that for a while. But there has to be something in it for gun owners, and we'll be standing, as the CCFR will be standing right there, standing on people's toes going, okay, how are you going to roll this back? So we can't do it without you. All right. Thanks for hanging in there. Like I said, we'll be right back with Wilson to get a report on our trip, on my trip to Ottawa and to Toronto.
There are politicians and bureaucrats in Canada who believe honest, hardworking Canadians cannot be trusted with firearms. These people will stop at nothing to make sure they are the only ones who can possess them. Let them know you don't consent to their ongoing campaign against you. Stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, now and for generations to come. Donate or become a member of the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights by visiting us at www.firearmrights.ca.
All right, now to talk about our trip to Ottawa, I've got Tracy Wilson on the Skype. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, Rod. How you doing? Welcome.
Not bad.
Home.
You know, funny thing. I said to Tracy, okay, well, I'm gonna click record when you're ready or whatever it was. So I was waiting for Tracy to do something, and then it was silence, and then we sat here, and then I'm like, oh, how long is it gonna take for her to get ready to do this thing? And I'm like, well, whenever you're ready. Oh, I'm waiting for you. So we sat there for 2 minutes, not saying a word.
Oh, anyway. My God.
All right. So we wanted to talk about a couple of our favorite parts of this trip because the trip was incredibly successful. I couldn't have imagined how successful this trip. Couldn't have anticipated it. So anyway, hit me up with a story, Tracy.
Okay, so things really did come together in the end. And, you know, the CCFR is a public relations organization first, and then a lobby organization second, right? So for me, there's three main, you know, areas or branches that we need to embed ourselves in order to make positive change for gun owners, the kind of stuff they've been looking for virtually decades. So number one, we've got a biased media. We've got media that's creative with their reporting and their stories. We've got politicians and lawmakers who vote on bills and create legislation. And then we've got the only court that actually really matters, and that's the court of public opinion. So we've got everyday Canadians who want to think critically about how gun laws are made, maybe think about their impact on crime versus their impact on law-abiding gun owners, and people who just want to protect democracy, right? Excuse me. So this week we got the chance to kind of dig our heels into every one of those levels, you know, those branches of outreach. So there's too much ground to cover for one interview and everything that we did. So I'm going to highlight my favorite from each of those categories. So media. We did a pile of media this week, tons of interviews. Literally, we were tag teaming interviews, you know, Rod in the room, me out in the hallway, stopping on the side of the highway in the car. Like, it was just complete mayhem, but we got a lot of really good work done. But my favorite media appearance was the press conference. So the press conference gave us a perfect platform to address the media and even just Canadians in general in a professional forum without shouting or interrupting. You know, sometimes when you're doing an interview, your interviewer can be aggressive or they can have an agenda of their own and they sort of direct the way the conversation goes. So in order, you know, to get the attention of national media and the undivided time to address the concerns of gun owners was invaluable. There's nothing that will really compare to that, right? So, you know, you can't do that on, on other interviews because it's their interview. Also, a fun little fact is we ran the clock on our time in the press gallery. So you're allotted an overall time. So you get your initial speaking time, then you get a question period time and the overall time of 30 minutes. So we ran the clock out on our time in the press gallery, and that sort of left us off to the side with Rod answering questions from media. You know, we're basically just hovered in the room, taking up space. So it was great. It just showed that there's so much to say, and the CCFR's messaging is so tight, and there's just so much information that needs to get out there to clarify, you know, the truth about the legislation and the truth about gun owners, that I found the press conference just to be, you know, the epitome of a perfect media presence.
Yeah, it couldn't have gone better.
No, it couldn't have gone better. It was absolutely perfect.
They just in case you don't mention it, they actually had to kick us out of there, right?
Oh, yeah. They had to say, okay, you're done. You need to leave the area. You know, we
leave
had reporters,
the area.
Reporters kind of stringing along with us. You know, it was pretty great. So, I haven't had time to even catch my breath and go find all that material, but it's out there. So we'll get the team working on that. So that was my favorite media memory. And then as far as legislation influencers, there's a little known meeting that we had. So we haven't really talked about this with anybody, but at the Minister's Summit on Gun and Gang Violence, I made acquaintance with Mr. Ron Bonnet. So he is president of the Canadian Federation of Agriculture, or CanadianFarmers.ca is their website. So Ron is a really nice guy, kind of down home country guy, you know, works for the farmers, you know, typical old school farmer, and he sits as a member on CFAC. So that's the Canadian Firearms Advisory Committee. So Rod and I went to his office here in Ottawa, and we sat down with him, and it was kind of an interesting engagement because, you know, he's basically sort of a handpicked, you know, guest of the minister on that committee. So it was sort of interesting to sit down with him in a really casual manner and have some conversation. I was a little bit surprised on how little they were briefed on Bill C-71. So, you know, that kind of bothered me because it's a huge, big deal to gun owners. I think the minister's sort of been skirting around some of the main issues and presenting it, you know, selling it to Canadians in a certain manner, but it's not totally true. So we gave him some good talking points to bring back to committee. We had a good meeting. Other than that, my other favorite political moments were actually secret. So we can't talk about them here, but we did have some really strategic, great meetings with a lot of, you know, influential political people in Ottawa. So there's a lot of work involved there. And I, you know, we're not going to talk about that right now, but watch for more on that coming. And
awesome.
So that's my favorite political moment. And then I'm a girl from the Valley here, and I really like just getting in touch with members, you know, with real people. I don't want to be just a talking head in Ottawa, right? So my favorite, public moment was our pub night. So yeah, I know those are a really, really casual, non-official CCFR type of event. You know, it's not at a range or a speaking engagement. It's literally just handshaking, hanging out, a social environment where we get to speak with our members, potential members. And we even just had some regular everyday Canadians that just want to know more about the CCFR, more about the proposed legislation, and kind of what the plan is to do, you know, to work on it going forward. So I know, there was a couple of people there who told me they're not even gun owners, but they're concerned with what's happening and sort of the fate of democracy, if you want to think of it that way. So it was really interesting just to, to see the crazy turnout. I think at one point we must have had 60 people in the room. Mm-hmm. I reserved a room for 30. So we were pulling in tables and chairs from other parts of the restaurant. And, you know, I was pushing people on the bench seats closer together so I could jam another person in between. And yeah, it was really great. And at the CCFR, members are number one. So, you know, whether they're existing members or potential future members, members are number one at the CCFR. So just to get down on a personal level and off, you know, I mean, we speak to them quite often through videos and Facebook lives and, you know, just posts and things like that. But to me, I love that personal connection of, you know, sitting down and saying, hey, what do you think? What do you think going forward? So that was my favorite kind of public moment. And it was connecting with everybody in Ottawa.
Cool.
On a personal level. Yeah.
Well, I remember the Ottawa pub night, but there was a lot of people there, and I got to meet Sandro, one of our directors, for the first time. So that was pretty cool. Cause it's, yeah. You know, we don't get to meet each other, you know, being in the same physical location very often. So that was really awesome. And got to meet a lot of people who I've seen and interacted with at some level online, and it was good. And I really enjoyed meeting people over at the TACCOM show. I'm going to be really quick because we're going a little bit long in this segment, but over at the TACCOM, what an event. I mean, there were thousands of people waiting to get in there, and I got a lot of great compliments and people thanking me a lot, you know, at the show. And you know, I tell everybody, and if I did meet you that day, you know this. I mean, I tell everybody that we can't do it without you. I can't do it by myself. And, you know, the most important thing is that everybody does a little bit to help. I mean, you know, if you want to do more, that's great. But the ultimate goal is to have a lot of people doing a very little bit, so it doesn't really affect them too much. And we can accomplish our goal, because the more resources we have, obviously, the more we can do. But it was just really great to meet all the people and hear all of our supporters and what they thought and why they thought we did a great job. And, you know, it was really neat. It was a heck of a trip. I'm going to sleep for a while and, but
not too long. That's just the beginning.
Not too long. Yeah.
I got to tell you, I immediately regretted my decision to take a day off and stay home rather than go to TACCOM. As soon as I saw the videos and the pictures, I was like, oh man, did I ever miss out? But yeah. I'll be there with bells on next year. So
it was a madhouse, and FOC is an awesome location, and Fred hosting this whole thing, Fred Pellegrino, he did a fantastic job. I was super impressed. I probably told him about 10 times. He's probably like, okay, yeah, I get it. You're impressed. But he did just a beautiful job, just super professional, very high attention to detail. The store is beautiful. So just, yeah, Fred, great guy, and just doing a really good job there. So
great. I can't wait to go and see it myself.
Yeah. For sure. All right.
Awesome.
Well, I appreciate the stories, Tracy, and we're going to leave it off here. And when we come back, we will have an interview with Ryan Stacey.
Over the past 25 years, tens of thousands of Canadians have had their firearms taken by no fault of their own through arbitrary reclassifications, paperwork errors, or senseless prohibitions. The government's perfect vision of Canada does not include you or your firearms. Let Canada's politicians and bureaucrats know they do not have your consent. Stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms by joining the CCFR right now at www.firearmrights.ca.
All right, everybody, we're back. In the studio, in the actual studio, I have Ryan Stacey with me. How's it going, Ryan?
Rod, I'm doing good. How are you?
Excellent. Thanks for asking. Now, Ryan Stacey, I'm sure a lot of people out there know exactly who he is, but if you don't, he is someone who works with International Barrels Incorporated, and he's also very well known, maybe better known for his involvement in service rifles. So he was the BCRA service rifle champion. Well, he won the championships 18 or more times. I tried to ask him before we started, and he actually couldn't remember, but he knows for sure it was 18.
They all blur into one. That's around 18 somewhere, roughly.
So, yeah, so which is 18 or more times than I have even seen someone that does a service rifle. So pretty awesome. And also the DCRA, which is a national thing. So National Service Conditions Champion 4 times in a row?
Yeah. Yeah, apparently I'm the first person to have won 4 in a row, so.
Very nice.
Hopefully I'll be doing number 5 at the end of August.
Probably, says your competitors.
Well.
Yeah, probably win it again.
We'll see how it goes.
Anyway, and if I haven't bragged him up enough, he is actually he's in the Service Conditions Hall of Fame for the DCRA. True?
This is true. Yeah, there's 7 of us, I think, and it's quite honorable to be a part of that group because there's some pretty amazing shooters in there. So it's pretty
awesome.
Cool. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. So there's lots of stuff that I wanted to talk to you about, but I think we'll start today with this segment is the DCRA stuff and the BCRA stuff here in British Columbia. I know precisely zero about that sport. I have a couple of friends actually that have probably come out to the big championship to shoot with you.
Oh, yeah?
And I don't know anything about it. So can you describe what that sport is and the organization, all the rest of that stuff?
Sure. Well, I'll start with the organization. The British Columbia Rifle Association, or BCRA, is the offshoot in BC of the Dominion of Canada Rifle Association. Its mandate is basically to help train civilians become better marksmen. Back in the day when possibly civilians would have had to help out in wartime. So obviously that's not really, well, I guess it is a thing still, but it's less of a thing. So they put on lots of different shooting matches around the country in different provinces. And probably the top shooters in the country are all DCRA, BCRA members at that sort of elite level.
So it's typically long range stuff, right? It's long range shooting.
Not necessarily. I mean, they have pistol shooting. They have small bore.
Oh, okay.
All kinds of different stuff through the DCRA and the BCRA for that matter. So yeah, basically any kind of shooting that you want to do, you can probably find something through the BCRA or the DCRA that would tickle your fancy, I'm sure.
So to speak. So normally I think that most, if you know, a professional broadcaster would leave this to the end, but I want to ask you before I forget. So, now if somebody wanted to get more information and figure out, hey, you know, is there a sport there for me? Is there an event there for me? How would they do that?
Yep. Well, the DCRA, Dominion of Canada Rifle Association, you can look it up on Google. In British Columbia, you can look up the British Columbia Rifle Association. They both have websites. And you can go on there and you can find contact info for the powers that be at both those organizations. And you can shoot them an email or I guess probably there's phone numbers there as well. Both of those websites sort of have a bit of a list as to what type of competitions they run as well. So you can kind of breeze through there and get an idea as to whether it's anything that works for you or not.
Mm, interesting. So now the championships for the BCRA are held over at General Volk's Range.
Yep.
And if you guys out there haven't heard of General Volk's Range before, it's quite an amazing 600 meters, I think.
It is. Yeah.
With,
600
butts and everything there.
Yep. Full on military range. I have shot on just about every range in Canada at some point or another throughout my career. And I will tell you that shooting on Volk's Range is like shooting on a golf course with a giant craggy mountain in the background on a sunny day. It's an amazing range. If you ever get the chance to shoot there, you should definitely give it a try. It's something else, especially in the summer.
Awesome. Now, the service conditions thing specifically, that is long-range rifle, the service conditions part?
Service conditions is a combination of pistol shooting, rifle shooting, service rifle, which is like a semi-auto along the lines of a C7 or an M1 Grand or any of those kind of things. And service conditions also includes the precision shooting, tactical precision shooting, like sniper type stuff, even though we prefer not to call it sniper shooting, or some people do at least anyway. It's tactical precision rifle shooting, basically. So service conditions entails all three of those. So when you go to Ottawa and you shoot at the Nationals, you can actually win the overall service conditions three-gun title. That's a thing. But mainly what I shoot is mainly service rifle, which is done with the C7 and AR-15, whatever you have. And yeah, we shoot from 100 meters all the way out to 500 meters.
Do you shoot 500 with the AR?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we shoot 500 meters with the AR-15. Everybody runs optics, so you have some sort of a scope on there, be it a, you know, like a one or a two or a three power scope, all the way up to, you know, some guys run some pretty heavy duty magnification.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever works for you. But yeah, we shoot all the way up to 500. And, you know, if you can shoot all your shots at 500 meter into about a 10 to 12 inch circle, you're going to be good to go. So the targets are fairly generous. They're 2 to 3 MOA usually. Is that not generous? No? Well, 500 meters
inch circle.
Yeah,
like I could probably get 10 or 12 feet.
Nah, you'd be fine.
Easily.
You'd be good.
I could easily do 10 foot at that distance.
Barn door size.
Yeah, I'm not even joking. Actually, I'm definitely not a long range guy. As I said before, I'm the end of the hallway guy.
Right? Well, we'll have to fix that somehow.
I don't know about that. I've actually tried to get into a little bit and found that that is not one of my talents.
No.
No, no. But
what if I took you out and put a piece of steel 1,000 meters out in front of you and made you lay down and shoot at that?
I'd probably get a sore back.
From me? That would be, yeah. All right, I can't help you there. You're screwed.
That would be the result. Nothing impressive, I assure you. Well, that's really, I had no idea that there was pistol shooting and all the rest of that stuff involved. That's awesome.
Service conditions originally came from the military because the Dominion Canada Rifle Association, their mandate was to help train people to, you know, fight overseas and all that kind of stuff in case of war or to defend the country in case of an invasion. So it was all the valid things that the military does. It's all pistol shooting, rifle shooting, and precision shooting. Back in the day when the Canadian forces used to have submachine guns, they also had submachine gun matches, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, those days are all gone now. But as a civilian back in the day, you could show up and they would hand you I guess it would have been a Sterling submachine gun, 9mm at that time, and you would shoot the submachine gun matches alongside the Army guys. And free ammo and the full meal deal, but unfortunately, there's no free lunch these days.
Well, what a... And as you know, and I told you this before, like this is a completely off the cuff discussion. I have no idea about any of this stuff.
Yeah.
And so now I'm having my own, you know, like the whole idea is that people are going to hear this and it's the first time they're hearing this and they're going through this little bit of a discovery. Like I'm doing that right now.
That's cool.
So the Canadian forces had a program where the idea was they wanted to have civilians to be there to support them. God forbid they ever needed it.
Yeah. Well, the program wasn't really through the Canadian forces. It was through the Dominion of Canada Rifle Association, and their part of their reason for their existence was to help train civilians in case of war or in case of invasion so that they could help the military. So they could form a militia, basically. And so that mandate, it's gone out the window now because, you know, that kind of stuff doesn't really happen anymore the way it used to. Mm. So now they hold a lot of competitions and they keep the civilian population shooting. They also help train the military because these matches are really good training sessions for soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
So like in Vancouver here at 39 Brigade, we would not have the amount of elite level shooters in the forces without the British Columbia Rifle Association. We just wouldn't because there's no place for those soldiers to actually practice that.
Mm-hmm.
Getting out and shooting your qualification once a year, which is usually in the fall and the weather is crap and nobody really cares. They sort of want to just get through it, is not a good place to learn elite level marksmanship, which is really what the forces need. Everybody qualifies to a certain level, but the reality of it is if you want to take and hold ground, you guys have to be able to shoot well, not just minimal standards. So the BCRA and the Dominion Canada Rifle Association really have sort of upped that through their competition series. And like now here in BC, I mean, there's guys going to Bisley almost every year from BC, which is something that, you know, 20 years ago, people were like, oh, Bisley, didn't somebody go there in 1943?
Hmm.
So
that's amazing.
Yeah, things have changed quite a bit.
Yeah, but that's just philosophically, just the idea that was the concept behind it and how unifying that idea is, you know, that where you get that camaraderie between fellow Canadians and that trust and,
yeah,
you know, that's the antithesis of division, right? Like,
yep.
I just, you know.
The other thing that you might find interesting is that the Dominion of Canada Rifle Association was probably the driving factor for not having prohibited AR-15s. Because the AR-15s used in competition through the Dominion of Canada Rifle Association alongside soldiers, and their mandate is to help keep the civilian population into marksmanship as well and help to train the soldiers up to a certain level. The government of the day decided to only make AR-15s restricted, not prohibited, so that they could continue shooting those matches alongside soldiers. And that is a huge reason why we still have AR-15s in Canada today.
That's an amazing story. There's a, you know, and Ryan and I are sitting here going, okay, so what are we going to talk about?
Yeah. As soon as you start talking, then it just all comes out.
No, that's really super interesting. Yeah. I had no idea about any of that stuff. So people can go to the website, they can see all the different types of programs and events they can. And yep. So there seems to be like something for everybody. If you like pistol, there's something there for you. Long range.
You
rifle.
Betcha. Yeah. as far as I know, the only thing that the Dominion of Canada Rifle Association and the provincial rifle associations don't do is they don't do any IPSC type matches where you're running and gunning like that. All the target shooting events they put on are all more accuracy based target events. There's nothing that requires you to be faster than the next guy. So if you're looking to do run and gun, three gun, IPSC, IDPA kind of stuff, then you won't find any through those channels. You'll have to look elsewhere. But as far as being the most accurate person, yeah, for sure. I mean, you can go to Ottawa and shoot to 900 meters. The guys shoot their C7s and AR-15s to, I think they get cut off at 600 or 700 meters. So you're shooting an AR-15 at 600 meters.
Mm-hmm.
There's not many people in the world that get a chance to do that very often under those kind of circumstances and hit the target. Most people think, you know, AR-15's good for like 200-300 or, you know, down the hallway kind of thing. But I don't know. Put the right driver behind it and the right projectile and you can make real good hits at 600 meters, no problem.
Well, I can make killer hits at 100.
Can you?
I assure you.
That's good.
From standing even.
From standing?
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Sweet.
that's really awesome. That's really awesome. Now, one thing I just because I did have a friend that went to the championship at Volks Range last year, I believe it was, or the year before, and he was trying to describe to me the course of fire. Mm-hmm. So I think he was shooting a bolt action.
Could be, yeah.
Right? So he's shooting a bolt action, and there are stages where the target will come up out of the butts.
Mm-hmm.
It'll pop up. You'll have 3 seconds of exposure, and you have to fire a certain number of rounds.
Yep.
And all that kind of stuff. And then it's gone, and then that's at like 600 meters or something.
Could be. It depends on which competition your guy went to. Did he go to service rifle, or did he go to the precision rifle match?
Maybe it was precision rifle.
Could be, yeah. So at the precision rifle match, it's probably one of the best matches in Canada that I've shot at. It's the most fun. because they're limited to 600 meters on Volks Range, they try and challenge you in other ways. So they put time limits on the amount of shooting that you have to do. They make the targets very small. They make the targets move. They do all kinds of different things, shooting from weird positions. You're shooting with a spotter who helps you out as well. So there's target identification. Like there's one match where there's a fake front of a hotel and there's 30 odd windows in this hotel and they Velcro the target in one of the windows and there's like 4 other people or 5 other people on there or other targets that you have to distinguish. So there's only one shoot one and then there's a bunch of no shoot ones and you have a limited amount of time to get your shots off on these little targets that every time they pull the target down, goes into a different window along the thing. So it's
at distance.
Yeah. I think the hotel match, I think this year it's going to be at 200 meters, but they were shooting it at 300 meters and your target was about a 1 MOA target. So it was about 3 inches at 300 meters, which when you have to find it, amongst a bunch of other targets and, you know, judge the wind and all the other stuff, it can be pretty challenging for sure.
That's wild.
Yeah. It's
cool. I didn't know any of that stuff either. What a cool match.
Yeah. And moving targets, so much fun. You know, they shoot a moving target match at 600 meters. So you have to know your leads and all that good stuff. And, because the targets are operated by people, they're not necessarily, smooth. So they kind of jerk along sometimes and it's the human factor that gets in there. So there's always lots of whining and complaining. Oh, my target stopped in the middle of the exposure or whatever. But you know what? That's all part of the fun of shooting all these different kinds of matches.
That's awesome.
So that's the precision rifle match. The service rifle with the AR-15s, we shoot back to 500. And it has basically 4 different types of matches. It has a deliberate match, which is a slow fire. You fire a shot and the person in the butts pulls your target down, puts a spotter in it and gives you a score. And you shoot 5 shots for sighters, and then you put 10 on score. And then after that, you shoot a snap match. So the target is only exposed for a short period of time, and then it goes down. You have to shoot your shots within there. Now, you may be shooting prone, but you may also be shooting in kneeling or sitting or some of those positions. So you have a deliberate fire match, you have a snap match, then you have a rapid fire match. The rapid fire matches are shot on two figure 11s, which are the charging man targets. And you have 30 seconds to shoot five shots on the left and five shots on the right in whatever position, depend on the distance that you're at, with a mag change. So those can be a little challenging. And then after that, you have a fire and movement. So you do a deliberate snap, a rapid fire, and then a fire and movement. And the fire and movement, basically you shoot a couple shots at the distance you're at, then you put your gun on safe, and everybody moves down to the next firing point, which is usually at least 100 meters away, and you deliver the rest of your fire on the target when you get there, usually in a snap sort of kind of manner. And the closer you get to the target, the more unstable your position gets to be. So the match number 12, which is the final match, is a 500 to 100 meter rundown. So you also get to run basically a half a K. And at 5, 4, and 3, you shoot in the prone. At 2, you shoot in the kneeling or sitting. And at 1, you shoot your final two shots standing. So after you've run 500 meters, unless you know how to deal with all the heavy breathing and all that kind of stuff, your last two shots are usually pretty wobbly. And it's a snap shoot too, so you only have 6 seconds to get them off when they come up. So
that's awesome.
It's tons of fun.
That is tons of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish I could do that stuff. I don't have any time for sports.
Oh, it's a likely story.
Yeah.
It's well, terrible.
You know, it's funny because people know the stuff that I do, right? I'm involved in a lot of things, and they're like, oh, do you shoot up sick? Or, oh, do you do three gun? I'm like, dude, I don't have a black badge.
No
like,
time. I don't have a black badge either.
I have barely enough time to just throw the gear on and pretend I'm doing that kind of stuff.
Get out and get a little practice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's been the interesting thing with this the job at the barrel company, because I'm doing lots of testing, so I'm shooting lots, but it's not shooting that's for me. I'm testing barrels and whatnot to make sure that they're, you know, the things we've done to them have made them up to my standards accuracy-wise. And so shooting a lot of groups is not really my thing. I'm not really a bench kind of guy, but it's been interesting, that's for sure.
Cool.
But not a lot of good shooting for practice.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, speaking of that, I think what we'll do is we're going to come back in another segment and we'll talk about the international barrels. And I've got some questions about barrels and how they're made and all the rest of that stuff too. So I really appreciate you taking the time, Ryan.
Of course. No problem.
It's a fact that licensed gun owners do not represent a disproportionate risk to public safety. Yet whether it's backdoor gun registries, complex regulations, or unreasonable penalties for paperwork offenses, Canada's anti-gun bureaucrats will never stop trying to eliminate your will or ability to own and use firearms. Take action, take a stand, and join the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights by visiting us at www.firearmrights.ca.
All right, everybody, that will do it for episode 17 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Thanks for joining me and hanging in there. It was quite a long one, but hopefully you got some entertainment value out of listening to Ryan. You know, there's somebody that really knows how to pull the trigger, unlike myself. But I certainly learned a lot in talking to Ryan, and I would like to thank him for coming on. I really appreciated that, and you'll hear a lot more from him on the podcast because geographically, he's close to me, and he's a great resource, a lot of knowledge there. So anyway, like I said in the very first segment, it is up to you to fight for your own right, your own ability to own and use firearms in Canada, and that takes some work. So try to make those phone calls, be reasonable, be very persuasive with people, be that calm, well-informed voice in the room. That's going to help. And if we can all spread out and thousands of us are all engaging in these conversations, the media can't hold a candle to that. Okay, they got the weird, 1940s propaganda tower sending out their waves of misinformation. That we can do far better than them for no money, just by having those conversations in our own lives. And obviously I don't want you guys to be out there, destroying your own relationships, but there's a way that you can do it, which is very calmly and very persuasively, and just engage in the conversation. And we're trying to plant that seed of doubt in people's mind when it comes to what they hear on television. So anyway, if you can, donate a couple of bucks to the CCFR. We can't do it without you. If you can spend some time doing that other stuff, that will help yourself, and that'll help all other gun owners. Other than that, thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.